Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Namaste, my friends, and welcome back to the Yoga Revealed podcast. This is Alec Vishal Rubin, traveling across the world for 7 months, interviewing some of the most well-practiced and devoted teachers. Today, it is an auspicious day to introduce two advanced teachers in the practice of Ashtanga Vinyasa Yoga, my teachers Richard Freeman and Mary Taylor. We met back in October to highlight their upcoming book release, The Art of Vinyasa.
That everything in our lives that we do becomes important enough that it can trigger our aesthetic sense of meaning and truth and beauty. And so everything we do can be approached in a way as an art.
It is a high blessing for us all to receive the teachings of two deeply devoted and kind practitioners of yoga. Slow down and tune in to this very special episode of the Yoga Revealed podcast.
Welcome, my friends, back to Yoga Revealed podcast. This is Alec Vishal Rubin, and it is such a blessing to be here in beautiful Boulder, Colorado on an amazing sunny day. And I sit across from two huge influencers in the yoga community, teachers and imprints in my life, Richard Freeman and Mary Taylor. Guys, thank you so much for taking time to come back onto Yoga Revealed podcast. What a gift it is to sit across from both of you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you. So today we are talking about something very exciting. You guys have spent, I'm not sure how much time, I'm sure a lot of time, developing and writing a book.
Yeah.
That's exciting.
It's taken a lot of work.
Yeah, it's a lot of time, a lot of work, and it should be out. We're hoping. It's out of our hands, so we're happy about that.
Wow. Yeah. That's exciting. Well, the title of this book is The Art of Vinyasa, Awakening Body and Mind Through the Practice of Ashtanga Yoga. We have a lot to talk about. So my first question that I thought about when I was when we set this interview in place was, A, what is vinyasa?
Funny you should ask that question.
Very much.
So, the word nyasa is means to sanctify something and then to place it down and let it go. And so you would do that with an offering in a temple or just a gift you give to somebody. You would wrap it up and make it all proper, and then you just give it to him. And then when you let it go, that's called that placement, or putting it down, letting it go, nyasa. And within the yoga tradition, this is, one, something you would you would use nyasa after you bathe to sanctify your body.
Mm.
So you take a bath, and then you place mantras inside your body in usually 13 different places. And you can visualize deities with those mantras if you like. And in this way, you have that placement. And then when you're done, then you've finished your bath and you have a whole different perception of your body.
Mm-hmm.
So vinyasa is then the particular steps you take in order to do the nyasa.
Mm-hmm.
So there are always things you have to do, balance the offering. If you're going to give a flower to someone, you get a nice flower. If you're working on a mandala or where you're imagining the petals of a flower, you would arrange the flower neatly. You would make all the contexts correct. You would even, pay it off. You know, if you had any debt on it. And so then when it's all wrapped up and it's a package, through many, many steps and counter steps, that's where the work is. Then finally, you give it away.
Mm-hmm.
And the ideal eventually is you do this with the entire universe. You place, once something means, it's become sacred to you, then you, like your whole subtle body or one of your chakras or something like that, then when you perceive it, you see, oh, everything is there. This is truly, all beings are in this. And then when you place it, then you let it go. That's the sense of total relief.
Mm.
But what's interesting is the idea of the vinyasa, which is then balancing left to right, front to back, top to bottom, both physically and then mentally, intellectually, and then arranging for whatever has to be done.
Hmm. So something interesting comes up. I feel when you explained all this, there's like a finesse to how we approach this sense of placing, and that finesse could be almost an art. Is that what this book is about?
It should be an art. Yeah, I mean, one would hope that after some time of doing that sort of thing, you realize exactly that it is, that everything in our lives that we do becomes important enough that it can trigger our aesthetic sense of meaning and truth and beauty. And so everything we do can be approached in a way as an art. And so in terms of yoga, the idea of vinyasa takes on the meaning of exactly what Richard was saying, where we, in our practice, it isn't just throwing ourselves into poses and trying to rush through a class or trying to zone out in a class or bliss out or avoid. It's that clear step-by-step approach to doing something that we feel this deep sense of connection to and aesthetic with, an art of. And then we take those steps and the counter steps, and you can make them as big or as small as seems appropriate at any given step, where, the breath step by step or the movement step by counter step can be on extremely subtle levels. Mm. And then you let it go. And so in a yoga practice, often what we forget is one of those two aspects of the vinyasa, either taking that care of really truly working it from every angle in an even and balanced way with the steps and counter steps, or the idea of letting it go and placing it down and letting it go. So
within yoga, I that makes a lot of sense, and I almost kind of want to shift it just for a moment, how this art form can be fully inclusive, just as you said, something that you feel on a deep visceral level where you're placing your attention. I mean, wouldn't that be able to go into those who write literature, those who create artwork, and those who are so filled up in their body, in their mind, Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And because whatever you're doing, it's if it becomes yoga, it's going to follow this pattern of abhyasa. Like in Yoga Sutra, they say there's abhyasa and vairagyam. And this is what gives you that state of nirodha, or the mind becoming, you know, awestruck and stunned. And so the abhyasa, which means repa, is the vinyasa. And then the vairagyam is when you, one, you, it's all of a sudden it's balanced and you see it as sacred, or you see it as empty. And then there's the natural letting go. And this would be in all types of work, you know, depending on whatever
kind
of work someone likes. You know, it could be in gardening, or it could be in,
yeah, in construction work, or in another, you know, quote unquote art form, like a visual art or writing or music. And the difficult part often when you create something in as an artist or as someone who is feeling this sense of art coming from yourself is the process of seeing when it's finished and letting it be and stepping back and taking oneself out of the picture so that, you know, as a writer, if you write some brilliant, you know, piece of work and then you are so taken with it, like, you know, you wander around the rest of your life thinking this is it that has been written in the world, the best thing that's ever been written, then you've, even if it happened to be one of the best things, you've kind of...
never let it go.
Yeah, never let it go, and you've lost a huge part of what the function and value of it might have been. You've kind of stepped in there yourself, and so part of it is this process of working something over to the point that you do disappear. You let it go because you've disappeared from the, you know, connection to it as mine.
And yeah, that's, I think, part of it. And I think in yoga practice, well, there are different historical cycles and different approaches to yoga. And occasionally I notice, you know, certain... approaches where the vairagyam or the nyasa is neglected because the people practicing don't want to let go and come back into that innocent state of just not knowing anything, where they aren't really there. They're just, but rather the ego wants to never dissolve, to never dissipate, and, you know, for the fiction that it ultimately is. And so there's a lot of practice, but there's no letting go.
And it's a risk to let go. You know,
huge
you,
risk.
Yeah, it's a major risk, so you want to...
Yeah, it's because it's like offering a gift.
Yeah, and it's the wrong size pants.
Yeah, it's the wrong gift.
So I'm curious, when you were speaking, I was like, is this different than being absorbed in something, almost like as you're creating this thing that we're going to hope to pass off and let go, that like state of being so immersed, absorption,
that you disappear. Yeah. So in what happens with vinyasa practice is you'll be doing many, many little vinyasas, say in your body, you'll be doing tiny, tiny vinyasas just with the subtle sensations in your nose. Okay.
Our breath.
Yeah, in your breath. And so then you'll be doing tiny nyasas with a, you know, it's almost like you complete a tiny little package. And if you had absorbed, you go, wow. But then there's a bigger package that you're creating. And so then you'll do other, so you're often doing the release or the letting go as you're practicing. You know, they're almost simultaneous. The better you are, the more you complete one step and you have that joy of letting go, but there are 25 steps to go. And so then you... And so it's... it's funny how it's almost like you're seeing how in the creation of like one petal of the flower, I'm going to offer, make, you know, a huge circle of them. But there's such satisfaction in that, that that's a mini nyasa, which we could also call a vinyasa. And you just keep going. So you, the better you get, the more you're letting go.
And also the more, as you say, the more absorbed you are in each of those moments and subtle moments. And so, yes, that feeling of absorption and sort of you disappearing in this sense of interconnectedness is right there. But the trick with the human mind is to not let that then say, oh my God, this is so cool. I'm like, you know, absorbed and I've disappeared. Isn't this wonderful? Look at me. And that's, so it's this slippery slope that we run into and over and
like
over.
The ego becomes attached either to vairagyam, complete letting go, or becomes attached to practice. It doesn't see that they're interdependent.
So there's a paradox here.
Oh yeah, that's always a good sign. So you'll find in other groups of yogis who, they won't practice. They just do vairagyam. You know, they sit around. Yeah, I don't need to read philosophy, or I don't need to do pranayama or asana, because, man, I'm already there. And in, only in theory, but they're not really seeing the beauty of the details of, you know, these small, limited contextual realities that are the body, that are the mind, that are the physical manifestations and forms around us. So they're unable to actually do art, because the ego has clasped onto, you don't have to do anything. You're already, the ego is saying, I'm already perfect, man. And so those are the extreme, you know, the vairagis who haven't done the practice.
Vairagis.
And then you get the fanatics who just do the practice but never do the vairagyam.
Yeah, so paradox.
So we have the art of vinyasa. There's an art to the vinyasa of breath that we're hearing. Is there a vinyasa to thought?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my.
Didn't you feel that?
Yeah. And, of course, people don't think about that. They're just thinking about in contemporary Hatha Yoga, they're just thinking of the sequencing of postures. Initially, that's what people love. They think of in vinyasa. Well, I'm going to do the fish pose after I do the bridge shoulder stand, or fish pose after the shoulder stand. Because they're obviously complementary opposites, and that feels great. But then zoom in, you know, a little bit, and you see what there's the vinyasa of inhaling and exhaling. And the inhaling and exhaling have very different, they switch on different systems in the body that are going back and forth. And so initially, that's where we appreciate it. But then we see in our interpretations of that, we're always doing what the Yoga Sutras would call vitarka. Because a tark means to make a proposition about something, just a theory. And vitarka is a counter proposition. So that's a word for the discipline of logic. But you're always doing it, you know, thought by thought. You know, you kind of, well, I overthought, well, I think that about that person. No, they're not quite that bad. And then you think, oh, they're not quite that good. And you think back and forth. And the mind always does that. So there's a vinyasa in the thinking. And then it gets more subtle. There's a, you know, just vichara is also the vinyasa of subtle inquiry. When the mind is so awake that you can't get whole formulated theory, it's just working with sensation and then these deeper intuitions back and forth. And it's, so the whole, all of creation vibrates back and forth, which if you, eventually you can feel or see as vinyasa.
And it takes the element, two elements, I think, of, you know, dedication and work and discipline. Mm-hmm. You know, those are paramount to being able to actually engage in this process, because you have to be constantly waking up, just as you've experienced in your own yoga practice, where you know, you have to constantly show up. So that's the work and the dedication, and then the discipline to really pay attention. And at those moments within our practice or within our relationships with others or within our relationship with our own mind or whatever, the discipline to persevere and to be truthful and honest and keep our eyes open so that we can take the right action and keep the work going. So it's almost like, you know, we are the worker bees mm-hmm. of this process mm-hmm. of keeping this alive so that it can manifest in whatever way is actually the best in terms of these actions, counteractions, and complementary opposites.
Mm. Thoughts and counter thoughts. So it's, yeah, there's a lot to that word.
Thoughts.
Yeah, thoughts. Well, the whole idea is that everything is composed of this vibrance. Mm-hmm. This vibrance, and that if you really look closely at the vibrance, it's this process, mm-hmm. and there's not a thing or ego in it. It's just what they call Brahman or emptiness, and so that vibrance, they call Spanda Shakti. That's the word for prana. Mm. Spanda means to vibrate. There's vibrant, divine energy. That's what's happening.
So I wonder, over the last 20 minutes, have we tapped into anything that you guys have written about?
Oh, no.
No.
We're working our way there, step by step. Yeah.
So what is like some of the top themes and highlights and focal points in the book? I love it.
Let's see.
We should have looked at it before we started.
We haven't looked at it for a while.
Well, you guys let it go. It's important to bring it. Place it all for a minute.
Fantasy and monogamy?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the use of the imagination in primarily in yoga postures initially and then in contemplative practice. And so...
Vikalpa?
Imagination.
Yeah, vikalpa is imagination.
Yeah, and visualization.
Yeah, visualization. And so, for example, to learn a classical or an ancient way of learning alignment, not that that's an ancient word, would be to visualize a deity form. Mm. And a lot of modern people think, well, that means that you believe in the deity or something, but no, if you're familiar with through mythology and just through being around deity forms, it's not a matter of believing or not believing in them, it's a matter of you embody it, the attitude of it, just like in a really good story, you know, you start to take on you feel the hero of the story, or the, you know, protagonist of the story, and you feel their emotions, and so the deity forms teach you basically alignment. And so we use imagination in order to feel subtle things deep inside the body as we practice the yoga.
And this use of visualization, you know, traditionally within the Indian tradition is something that, you know, you're going to India and that you will be running into all kinds of amazing deities that are sculptures here and there, pictures here and there. And so the art forms are very specific in the way they are approached. It's not like, you know, you just say, oh, well, I'm going to do this abstract form of Ganesh, and which can be a beautiful, could be a beautiful thing. But if you are approaching it as a meditative art, for instance, working on drawing a tanka, you could take the classical way of drawing tankas and make some study that for a long, long, long time and practice it for an even longer time and learn how the proportions have been traditionally worked with, etc. And then you can reproduce these beautiful tankas or beautiful statues. Mm. And then at that point, as a modern artist, you might do some form of art that's a version of that that might be stunning. But in terms of the classical look, you would have had the training to be able to reproduce that as it was made in the classical manner. And that the classical manners have been developed with a lot of trial and error and lineage influence, just like a yoga practice has, a solid yoga practice has, so that it's not like you just freeform everything. You have this deep background, understanding proportion that stimulates within the body the precise movements and forms and subtle awareness within the subtle body that is written about in many of the, you know, texts, etc., or that we as modern yoga students, you know, sort of aim at or aspire to finding these same feelings of correct proportion, so that it's not just like, you know, any proportion works, any amount of action and counteraction. There's this extreme refinement to it and this balance to it that gives you the real deal and the deep connection to what we're looking for in yoga. And so that, so it's not just a random, well, let me think this, now I'm thinking this, let me think mm-hmm. that. It's something that is very, very refined, and through art and through visualization of that art, and it doesn't have to be simply in Indian art. It also happens in some of the classical Western art.
Egyptian display in London a few weeks ago. Totally like...
Yeah.
Fantastic animal heads and tails on the different deities, and all interface with ancient Greek art. Same principles going on. For example, if you want to sit straight for meditation, you know, there's a certain... You could describe it biomechanically. You know, like you should put, you know, the ears, centers of your ears are pretty much in the same plane, the same coronal plane as the centers of your shoulder joints, which are in the same as the centers of your hip joints. Okay. That's a pretty boring description, but it'll work, you know. But these other schools, they would have you, you know, visualize a remarkable crown on the head with like really nicely designed earrings. Mm. And then the way the shoulders, you know, fall, or the cloth falls down the back of the deity, and then the way that the chest opens, and then there's so many ways it can be done with the golden spires on the crown of the head, or
it's visceral,
fanciful belts, and it's not that you believe in these things; it's just like you feel them. You feel them. And then the another thing we do is to feel your pelvic floor. You can imagine you have a tail.
Hmm.
And it's not your tail, you know, it's a tail.
Right.
And that means that the muscles of the pelvic floor have just come online. And then it allows you to trace these very subtle internal lines to the body.
So how is it through visualizing different deities, how does that relate to our yoga practice, and what is the service to that relationship? What do we receive?
Oh, well, you start to get the visceral feeling of the physiology of what it is to be open, to be free. Because we're in yoga, basically, we're imitating what the posture would be is if you were wide awake, and you weren't like, you know, feeling neurotic or psychotic or something.
Oh goodness!
Imagine that.
Yeah, and then So it's almost like, so let me assume the posture of being awake and the posture of having, open heart and having dropped the breath deep down into the navel, or having my palate empty as if, I were really listening or really seeing or really... and so we create that condition in the prana, which is our sense fields and our physiology, of what it would be like to be awake. Not that we're awake, but so it almost imitate. And then doing that, all of a sudden your senses are reawakened. You start to like, oh, you feel things differently. As if perhaps, the deity in some sense is what your actual being is, Not that your ego is that deity, but this is what it feels like to really let go of everything.
So a certain part of yoga is returning to what's already there, to your natural state, to, the truth of who you are as a person interconnected with others without your, facade of self. And so it's just these tricks, whether they're physical, mental, imaginary, of the tricks of getting back to the state of pure awareness.
And
it's getting back to the state of connection to that, but not then identifying with it and saying, oh, I've got it. And so to be able to identify it, we have to identify it in order to be able to talk about it. But at the moment you identify it and put a name on pure consciousness, then you're kind of in trouble, but you have to be, it's again a paradox. You're already in trouble. You were born. So it's it's this paradox that we always run into. And so these are tricks to unlearn some of the stuff that you've, become so certain about.
Yeah.
And one hopes that that's within our practices, that, that's even when you've written a book that you think is good, that that you let it go and that you then think, maybe I don't know anything. And maybe that's true.
What experiences for you two who spent so much time, 71, being a student and teaching throughout, and what experiences today leaves you feeling like, I know nothing, but I'm still receiving.
Watering the lawn.
Yeah, I was gonna say and just about anything.
Watching the honeybees and the flowers is wow. No idea. And then whenever I teach a class, I really go, oh, I know nothing. But it's nice not to know anything. It's like a moment of trust, where you kind of let go of your knowledge structure. And you're right back at that beginning point, which is a good alignment will give you that taste. Mm-hmm. And it has something to do with what you're communicating through the discipline of yoga. That it makes no sense on social media, though. I don't know anything.
It could be a new trend, maybe. I doubt it, but it would be a short-lived trend.
You know the word shraddha, which is a big one, meaning trust, or often translated as faith. But it doesn't really mean a religious faith, like I believe in this prophet, but not in that. Things that you could never know anyway. And you're faking it, you're believing it, or pretending you do. But the shraddha is more like being very comfortable not knowing. It's like this trust, and you even hesitate to say what it is you trust in, but you kind of know in a way. And you keep returning to that present moment feeling.
So within the book, the first third of it is part that is, you know, working this kind of idea, the idea of developing, you know, a sense of trust, a sense of connection to beauty and to this inner balance through different things like visualization, etc. So the first third of it is that, and a little bit of actual quote-unquote anatomy, you know, true anatomy, what would be called anatomy.
And scientific.
Somewhat scientific. You know, so there's that part. And then the next two-thirds is simply the postures that are in the Ashtanga system, mm-hmm. that are all of the postures of the primary and intermediate series, and a few others that exemplify some of the points that we're making about the different families of postures. So what makes it different from other books about Ashtanga yoga is that we didn't take the tact of having it be, well, here's the primary series, here's the intermediate series, and here are the postures. Although they're all there, what we did was to divide them into families so that you could look at the common patterns, say, of forward bends or back bends or
twists.
And then at the back, we do have the lists and the pictures of, you know, what the series are. But part of what felt important to us in terms of this book was to be able to, you know, for people who are longtime Ashtanga practitioners, to be able to offer something that allows us to look at our practices from a slightly different perspective, not necessarily saying, here's this series, that series, etc. And for people who are non-Ashtanga yoga practitioners, we offer it in terms of, you know, how those postures do tie together to make some sense, that those that appear in the series. So we're hoping that it...
Yeah. So it's going to allow the Ashtanga system to... Then once people know it, then they can adapt it to specific circumstances,
mm-hmm.
like old age, disease, death, things that...
We've worked on all of those except the death part so far. We're working on it.
For sure.
But, you know, it's like... Because the principles remain. It's just that, you know, your abilities and get, you know, they change over the not only they change day to day but decade to decade, you know. So
and again, that's a good thing, you know. That's a difficult thing for yoga practitioners on one level, to, you know, have an illness or an injury that then, and I've been in the yoga practice room with you, Alec, and have been ill or have seen others with injuries, etc., and we continue to practice and to figure out what that means within that context, which is a very important part of yoga, is to not run away from it and also not be so pigheaded that you just stick with it no matter what and do the same thing over and over and become dogmatic. And so it is a reality that for all of us, you know, it's a very, very important thing to start looking at what our ideal might be and then, well, what's the reality today? Got to ride the wave and have those little steps within that riding of the wave of, well, here's this action, and if I take that action, then here's the counter action so I don't fall off the surfboard, you know, so, yeah. And then what you find is that, you know, using that analogy of riding waves, that you get more adept. You can do more complicated, you know, bigger waves because you've honed the finesse of interacting within that system of the practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there are the times when the hurricane puts you off.
Yeah. Yeah, and sometimes you need to evacuate.
Yeah, and so part of the idea in the book is that are trying to point out what is of importance that we're actually working on as we practice yoga. And that's something you have to reformulate. Well, this is what's important, and this is what's important. And so it gradually becomes more and more clear, like, what is it that's really interesting?
Would you say that which is important is universal to each practitioner, each person, or maybe there's some individual facets of...
Well, there are individual facets, but there's something about it that we hesitate to define. It's completely... Is the same the right word? Universal the right word? Because then you start to see others as, you know, doing the same practice you are. And then it makes you a little more compassionate.
Doesn't seem you're too hesitant to try to, not define it, but to maybe touch it.
Yeah, yeah. Why wait? It's much more fun.
So what are some of those universal threads that are weaving us all together in this practice?
What are they? Let's see.
Again, in what we've tried to do in this book is to recognize that they are tangible things, like within an asana practice, and then less tangible things like visualization or ethical underpinnings that within each of those, you know, whether it's some tangible thing like, well, you rotate your foot this way, or some tangible thing like, well, you don't kill people, or they then become more and more and more subtle levels of comprehension of how whatever topic you're thinking of, whether it's the anatomy or the ethics, how those are constructed, relate within your understanding of things, relate within your experience of things, and then relate with you as part of the bigger picture. And so how do you get into this understanding from a broad view to a more subtle view, whether it's through an asana or through a theory or through a visualization? How do you do that? Because the part of what we are doing every time we practice is to go to that level, whether it's, you know, the sameness or the universalness or whatever, we're deepening into that place. And that's, I think, one of the reasons so many people are interested in yoga these days, is you get a taste for that sense of touching into something that is vast, and it's just wonderful. And so you want to try to get there from as many different ways as you can, and then let it go. Put it down, do the work, do the discipline, and then let it go.
Wow. Thank you. So can we maybe speak to some of the challenges that have arisen through writing this book? And how you've used the challenge as the practice material? I would imagine so.
Well, one part was we did photos for the book.
These are really nice photos.
We've only seen two. No, they're good.
It's good. The photos of the postures and then some of the movements and alternatives.
There's
positions.
A wonderful one of Nolly that we're gonna. We keep thinking we're gonna make
animating.
It into. Yeah, because it's so silly looking.
I was lamenting, and I think Mary to some degree was lamenting that, if we'd only had done these pictures, you know,
before,
20, 30 years ago.
Before we were in
be
our 60s.
Much easier, you know, and the postures would look a lot better. And then fortunately we had a really nice photographer who was...
He was great.
...good with lighting. It was only 3 days of...
But they came out.
They came
out,
okay.
Out really well, I think, given... Yeah. Given everything, we'll show them to you.
And this is a very nice posture here on the front cover.
Yeah.
Yeah, nice silhouette shot. But was, and then, you know, for, because I've done, I used to do lots of photos and the videos and things back when I was, you know, younger, you know. And then looking at these photos and like, oh, no, what happened? You know? And
but then it's just a seeing good exercise.
How silly that is in my own brain. Of course, I used to be younger, you know. I haven't met anybody who used to be older, you know. And it's like, this is profoundly silly on my part, you know. And then kind of getting into it, well, it's fine, you know, because I'm, you know, the yoga is actually getting better with, you know, less work. It's getting to be better.
Yeah, so that was
before I let go of, like,
yeah, the challenge really was not so much the actual photos themselves. There's something like 200 and something pictures.
Yeah.
There's a ton of pictures. It's 350 pages long almost with the whole book. So there are a lot of pictures. And to do them in 3 days was amazing.
It's a lot of asana.
It was a lot of asana. And,
yeah.
You know, so in that, when we look at it, it really is what Richard was saying. You know, it's hard to look at yourself to, you know, and to say, oh my gosh, look, there's that person. Who is that? You know, who is that old person? And then realize, oh, that's me. And then, because as you age, one of the things that you experience, which you will experience one day too, is this sense of that you're really not aging, that there's this continuum, this connection with who you were when you first started to really, you know, kind of have this cognition that you were part of the world, that the world wasn't completely, you know, circling around you. And you'd have flashes of that. And as you age and get older and older, and we've talked to older people than us even who have, you know, said things that allude to this, that you feel like you're young still.
Yeah,
because
fresh,
there's
innocent.
Yeah, there's that connection. And so on one level, that was the difficulty with the pictures, was that it's like, you know, we were right there with them and it felt just great. And then you look at the faces and it's like, well, how did the gray hair happen? You know? So, and then you say how silly that is, just as Richard was saying. And we do that on a little level, you know, in our practice, like, why am I not as flexible today? Or, you know, and it's like, oh dear, what's wrong? I had a really bad practice. And it's all this mind game. So that, it was both a good exercise and, you know, it wasn't that difficult to do them.
Yeah, the pictures were
It was fun.
Symbolic.
Yeah.
It's almost like there's this 25 or 35 inner you looking down at this vessel and shape, and you're like, where did what?
Yeah, and I think you know, part of what we thought, oh, we could get young people to be the models, and we're making it sound like they're really creaky and old. I think that we should have shown you the book ahead of time, because they're not that bad.
Sure, they're awesome.
Yeah, but you know, but then you realize that part of what we're teaching is that this is a practice that hopefully you will do until your last breath. And that doesn't mean that you will be, you know, doing the fancy poses where you're standing on a mountaintop with your leg behind your head or whatever. It means that you will be doing the deeper part of this practice if you, you know, just stay with it, that this will get you through, as it has for us. It can get you through the tough times.
Mm-hmm.
And that's much more important than which pose you're doing.
What about a challenge of the literature piece and the writing?
The writing. We had a good process.
Good process.
Yeah, so we would, we got a good out, we, you know, talked about getting a good outline and sat down and discussed it. And then we would, it just works with our system of writing together for us to talk and for me to take notes and as we're talking. And then I would start you know, we would say, here's this one section we're going to talk about, and we'd talk about it and write notes as we were doing it. Then I'd do the first draft, give it to Richard, and he'd work on it, and we'd do it back and forth in that way, and it seems like it works. Mm. Do you think?
Yeah, I think it works. Yeah. Yeah, more is coming.
Yeah, more things are coming. Yeah.
Would you say that this writing of your book together allowed you guys to connect deeper with one another in a different way that was maybe a little, I don't know, new? Have you worked on a book together before?
Mm-hmm.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Cool. So this is good.
Yeah. Yeah. It is familiar territory.
Good.
And then what I always find in this type of book is the Sanskrit diacritics.
Oh, so that, talk about hard.
That is a technical difficulty, particularly with computer software, because there are 50 letters in the Sanskrit alphabet, and there are how many?
26.
Oh, goodness. In the Roman alphabet. And so you have to, and so we were quoting, you know, not only the names of the poses, but quoting a few verses here and there. Hmm. And then to get the diacritics entered within the particular software that the publisher uses, it's just, it's a headache, I think, yeah. That's the word for it. And it takes more time than...
Even for a scholar, such as yourself, in the Sanskrit language, I couldn't imagine 26 to 50 letters.
Yeah. So all these funny things. And getting the computer to make the letters correct, and then sending it off to the... And they send it back, and oh, oops, we forgot. There's a mistake there, and there's a mistake there. So there's a lot of back and forth with the publisher getting correct.
And then you know, running spell check or running, you know, find such and such a word, and you find some diacritical marking for some part of a word that then appears in all these other words, like system or something, might have part of a word that you had corrected in Sanskrit, and then suddenly all the systems in the book would also have this weird Sanskrit part in them, and you go, wait a minute. So it's a complicated...
Nice.
It's good.
Wow.
It's...
Yeah. Well, thanks for giving us behind-the-scenes experience on that. Well, just a few more questions. I think I'm going to read this little excerpt right here. It says... more than just a book, this is a body of work that proves that yoga is a spiritual path and that the body is not reducible to mere bones and muscles. I strongly recommend this book to all sincere students of yoga. From Miss Kino.
Oh, she's, yeah.
Miss
Kino McGregor.
That was kind of her.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
Wow. So how many people have read this book thus far?
Well, our editors, ourselves.
We've sent it to 4 or 5people.
Yeah.
Select.
Yeah.
Select few.
Well, we got, you know, in the publishing process, you send it to people who you write know blurbs. Who might write blurbs. So
let's say by the time this recording is live and out into the ethers of the interwebs, the book will be released and it'll be available to the entire Ashtanga community.
Great.
You know, all across the world, and especially to the beloved yoga workshop.
Yeah.
And say someone has read the book.
Yeah.
Okay, they're done. What would be your golden nugget that you would kind of be offering to these readers, to our listeners, as they look to integrate that which you have offered into their own lives?
What would you say?
I would just say, you know, see if there's one small thing that speaks to where you are now.
Mm-hmm.
And don't try to read it front to back. You know, just take one small section and see if that works for you. And then... keep coming back to it if that feels right.
Yeah, if you find any little bit of it fascinating, then go into it.
Go into it more deeply. Yeah.
You know, it could be a philosophical point, or it could be an alignment point in the postures, or it could be one of what we call internal forms, you know, having to do with your palate or something. But explore it. And so So that would make, that would be consistent with Patanjali's teaching in Yoga Sutra, that what you take the process of samyama, which includes this keen observation through samadhi, just looking at stuff, and you find just something that's interesting. Mm. Whatever it is, it could be microscopic or macroscopic or even middle size.
Going to it. Well, Richard, Mary, I'll speak for my own self, which I think is reflected in so many of the I would imagine hundreds and thousands of people that you have influenced. We have so much love for you guys. You guys are amazing examples of how kind you are, how compassionate you are, and just how dedicated and devoted you are to sharing what you love. So thank you. We're really excited about the art of vinyasa.
Thank you.
I think that it'd be appropriate if we could close with the closing chant as we open.
Oh. Okay. Well, this is a chant to kind of give it all away to others. Oh. And so it's for the well-being of other, all types of beings everywhere.
Mm.
May they be happy. And so it's, and we can chant that. Om Swasti Prajabhya Paripalayantam Nayena Margena Mahim Maheshaha Go Brahmanebhya Shubham Astu Nityam Loka Samasta Sukhino Bhavantu. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Yoga Revealed Sangha, this is Alec Vishal Rubin thanking you so much for listening to Richard Freeman and Mary Taylor on the Yoga Revealed podcast. Richard and Mary's new book is now available to you at richardfreemanyoga.com. Click on Shop in the Books tab to order today. They recently launched their new website, and it is so beautiful. See if you can catch them as they travel and teach around the world. My friends, until next time, keep practicing and visualizing the best life that you deserve. Namaste.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.